Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Big problems become big problems when you let small problems sit.
This Bendrovsky Show, Benny J. Bonus Interview, is brought to you in part by... What's so funny?
I'm just dancing at the little disco ball. Woo,
woo. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9. The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150. And the Chicago Federation of Labor. Benny J., take it away.
Bonus time at the Bendrovsky Show as I speak. It's Friday, July 3rd, 2020. It's a podcast you can be listening anytime. And just to give you a little sense of what's going on, well, it's the day before the 4th of July, which is apropos for the conversation we're about to have. And the headline in the Chicago Tribune, home delivered as always. At crossroads for 4th, bars and restaurants caught between tough rules and holiday crowds. And we've been making fun of this all day. This photo of three bros.
The broiest of the bros.
Three bros. Let's have a brewski guy. And so... some bar in Wrigleyville. They're so happy. They're bros. I should stop making fun of bros, D.
Nah, let's keep it on there.
All right, let's keep making fun of bros. All right, as we do with all bonus shows on the Ben Jarofsky Show, we ask our distinguished guest to introduce him or herself. So, distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
Hello, everyone. My name, or as... Ben loves to call me Tonio.
That's correct.
Graphic designer, web designer, social media expert. The one and only me.
All right, Tonio. Tonio is also, this is why we're having him on the show to have this very specific discussion, but I have a feeling we're going to branch off. We are dropping the show on the 4th of July. And so I thought it would be appropriate to reach out to Tonio and talk to him about his experiences in the Marine Corps and to talk to him about his, I'm going to put an adjective on, an interesting attitude about the national anthem. I just thought it'd be fun to talk to Antonio about patriotism on the 4th of July, get a different perspective. This is an ongoing conversation. Antonio's a dear friend of mine. We've been having this conversation for years. I'll start with the headline, and then we'll backtrack and explain to how we got to it. But basically, Antonio does not stand for the national anthem when it's being played at a sporting event. I know this because I've been to sporting events with him. And I'll be standing and he'll be sitting. He won't take a knee. He's sitting. And
Ben will high five me, by the way. He'll high five me, but he'll be standing.
And that is interesting, huh? What is that?
I don't know. You take this tough stand, Antonio, not me. And then I'll always go, oh, the knee. I see the knee is acting up again, huh, Antonio?
Right.
All right, so let's explain the backdrop of this, and I guess it starts with your decision to join the Marines. So let's just start at the beginning of the story go ahead.
All right, so, you know, there's a couple of people that join the military. There's those that need something, you know, they need guidance, they need to find a place. And then there are those who, you know, want to be a warrior, who want to do the things that it takes for someone to join the military. And I happened to be the first one where I was looking for guidance. I was looking for, you know, somewhere for my life to go, because at the time it wasn't really going anywhere. I was hanging out with the wrong crowd. I was, you know, dodging bullets on the south side of Chicago, which is never a good thing. Statistics have, you know, plainly put that out there, that dodging bullets is not a good thing. It won't turn out well for you.
Sometimes they catch and, up with you.
And not because, you know, I was doing anything to have, you know, to create that circumstance, except for living on the south side of Chicago, you know. And so I decided that I wanted to join the military because I wanted to do something positive with my life. I wanted, you know, I'm dodging bullets here, in my neighborhood. I would rather do that for something noble, like joining the military. And so that's how I got into the Marine Corps. I didn't tell my parents anything. I knew for 3 months, I believe. I knew for 3 months that I was going to the Marine Corps, and I didn't tell them until the week before I was scheduled to leave for boot camp. So,
how
you can imagine.
How old were you back then?
I was 18.
So you're just out of high school. You got out of high school and you went into the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
And what year was this?
This was 1994.
Was the United States at war in 1994?
They were at the tail end of the Desert Storm conflict. So they were at the end of that. I got my National Defense Medal because I caught the tail end of it, but I never got deployed anywhere.
And so were you ready? I don't think I've ever asked you, were you ready for the Marine Corps in terms of just physically being able to handle boot camp? Or was it just a shock, to put it mildly?
Yeah, it was a swift kick in the ass, I would say. one that I probably needed. I was okay at running a mile and a half, but whatever shortfalls I had, boot camp quickly fixed that for me, let's say.
It what was the word you used? Boot camp, what? Fixed it for it, you.
Yeah, fixed it.
So
yeah,
you were young enough, you know, you got in shape fast.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you run every day, you exercise every hour of the day. Every time you mess up, you're exercising. So you have no choice but to, you know, get in shape. So it happens. There are some people that can't do it, you know, and they get sent back and, you know, have to keep doing it over and over until they get through that. But that didn't happen to me.
And
one interesting thing, though, mm-hmm. While I was in boot camp, we stopped everything. This is 1994. We stopped everything to watch O.J. Simpson on a highway.
Oh, my goodness. You're kidding. Even the Marines stopped everything to watch O.J. the Bronco?
Rolled out. Remember the big box TV set? And they'd be up on the, like a little cart, and they roll it out and everything. They put it in the front of the deck, and they had everybody sit down, and we watched O.J. Simpson get chased by the L.A.
Were you still in boot camp when that was going on, or were you already?
Yeah. No, I was in boot. We were in the middle of boot camp. So my boot camp started in April and ended in June. So I'm guessing somewhere in between there.
Yeah, no, I know. Let me tell you something. I am the only human being in America who was upset that TV program was preempted for that. I'll tell you why. I'm a basketball fanatic, as you know. We'll get to that because we're going to be talking about the national anthem. And I was watching the finals, the NBA championship, the NBA finals between the New York Knicks and the Houston Rockets. And when OJ started the chase on the highway, at first, it was a box in the lower right corner of the game. And then the game became a box in the lower right-hand corner of the chase. And then the game disappeared completely. As whoever was doing programming for, I think it was ABC, said, you know what? More people are interested
in this car chase than the game. And I'm the one guy. Hey, what about the game? I don't care.
You're probably the only person that noticed that switch, unless there are other diehard basketball fans out there. But it sounds like they were trying to do that, you know, kind of covertly so that nobody would catch on, you know, kind of like turning the volume down slowly, hoping nobody notices.
Well, they probably were realizing that everybody was running away from ABC, going to other stations to watch the chase.
Right.
And so they said, right, oh, to hell with it. And
the start of the 24-hour news cycle, that's what that was.
So, yeah, that's a memory from your boot camp days. All right, so were you a gung-ho Marine? Did you, when you were in the Marines, were you the kind of, would you have stood for the national anthem?
I mean, you had to. I mean, you basically took an oath to do that, you know, to defend the country, the Constitution, and against any enemies, foreign or domestic, right? Mm-hmm. Which is funny because, you know, you have a lot of, you know, this whole thing with the Confederate flags, which are, you know, the Confederates were, you know, domestic terrorists, so our domestic enemy, and that's part of our oath, is to defend the country against any enemy, foreign or domestic. But, you know, we won't go into that right now. But I wasn't gung-ho. I was just there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I saw the game that was being played. And I just played it, plain and simple, you know. And I really thought, you know, okay, once boot camp is over, then, you know, things will change and I'll be in the Marine Corps and, you know, things will, you know, these games and everything will be over with. And no, I mean, this is the Marine Corps at that time, during that time, I don't know how they are now, but during that time, there was a lot of hazing going on and they were trying to, you know, change that, at, you know, during that time. And, hazing, a lot of anti-gay stuff going on. Really, that was all really prevalent in the Marine Corps. And the Marine Corps is a branch of service that prides itself on being the best, and, you know, being the best of the best, right? And so the culture means a lot to the Marine Corps. So the hazing was really hard to drill out. And the whole anti-gay stuff was really hard to drill out because it was, you know, it was ingrained. And if you even slightly said, hey, I think that's wrong or that's not right, people thought you were gay or something. They started pointing the finger at you, you know? And so,
yeah,
that was something you didn't want to bring any attention to yourself in that.
You said something, I wrote it down. I saw the game that was being played and just played it. Be a little more specific about that. What was the game and what does it mean to be playing it?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people that go in there and So there's a lot of people that go into the Marine Corps and they don't understand the psyche of what's going on. And so the drill instructors are down your throat, yelling and screaming, calling your stuff trash. You know, they call you a lady. They're doing all this stuff to, like, just tear you down. And I don't know why, but I saw that. I just saw it for what it was. I have no idea why, because I've never experienced anything like that before. I was scared for a couple of days and wasn't sure what the hell I'd gotten myself into. And so I don't know what compelled me to understand that this was just a game. And if I played the game, then I was okay. But if I went against the game and tried to, you know, say I have rights or, you know, you're being harsh or, you know, whatever the case may be, or, you know, not do what I was being told to do, then that's when your life got harder. That's when you began, you know, to sweat a little bit more during your boot camp.
Yeah, and so you just learned to shut up.
That's part of it, but I mean, you know, even then, if there's a whole lot, there's a game that goes with it, you know, where I mean, there was a point. Okay, let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. There was a point where And I'll remember this for the rest of my life. Okay. We were doing, you know, boot camp is a bunch of education and a bunch of, you know, physical training and everything else. A lot of testing is going on. A lot of learning is going on in the classrooms and stuff like that. And when what you do, maybe 2-3 hours of learning and then you take a test. Well, I was sent to go do, you know, some, you know, go help clear out another squad bay or something like that. Squad bay is where where everybody lives. You know, it's just one big room with like 50 people in it, and it's just called a squad bay. All the bunks are in there lined up, you know, from one end to the other. And so we had been assigned to go clean up another squad bay. While I was over there cleaning up, they were, you know, learning stuff, vocabulary and other things. And so then we get done over there and they send us back, and I get back in time for the freaking test. And so I take the test and I get 2 questions wrong. I don't know what the first question was that I got wrong, but the second one was fraternization. And I had never heard that word in my life, ever. So the drill instructor was just so hell-bent on everyone having the perfect score. But he just went down on me on that word, fraternization. How do I not know what fraternization is? And so he made me do push-ups, you know, until there was a pool of sweat under me. And then he's like, do you know what the word fraternization means? And I, you know, yes, sir. And I, you know, spew out the definition that they had. And he's like, yeah, I don't think you know what the meaning of that word is. Go see Sergeant Joe Sergeant so-and-so. He's out in the, quarter deck outside. He'll help you out. And so I go out there and I can't remember the drill instructor's names, but I can see their faces clear as day. But I run out there, you know, sir, drill instructor so-and-so told me to come out here. And he's like, oh, what did you do, Correa? You know, he's like, get down, start pushing. He's like, go back inside. I go back inside. Oh, no, you're not done. Get back out there. You know, there's just this game going back, you know, and I'm like laughing to myself because I know what's going on. I know it's just a freaking game, but I'm not letting it get to my head. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, and that's what I meant. Like, you don't let it get to your head. You just play the game and you just keep going and you get through it. But there are people that can't play the game. And so it gets to them, like, why can't we change this? Why can't, you know, we do it this way? Why do we have to do it this way? And they try to change the system, and that's where they start going wrong.
You know, listen. Which, go ahead. Finish your thought. I apologize. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No. I was just going to say, which leads, you know, to, like, the culture of organization or group, and is part of the problem with the police department. You know, they develop this one culture where people feel like they can't, you know, change it or don't want to deviate from it, and so for fear of repercussions or whatever, ridicule.
Well, that leads into exactly, you read my mind where I was going. I had sent you an article, required reading. You come on the Ben Jarofsky show, which I've been sending I've been sending this article to so many different people. It had a profound impact on me, Antonio. It was an article in the New York Times about Alex King, I think that's his name. And he's one of the 4 Minneapolis police officers who's been charged in connection with the murder of George Floyd. And he is African-American. He was the officer who had pinned down George Floyd's legs. Derek Chauvin murdered him by putting his knee on his neck. But the story tells about how he grew up. He was a sensitive young man in a liberal family. His siblings are involved with Black Lives Matter. One of his best friends from high school growing up is a Black Lives Matter activist. This guy joined the police force because he wanted to be a force of change, be a positive element as a black man in the Minneapolis police force. Something happened to him during the training. He was trained by Derek Chauvin, which is unbelievable to me that, it is sadly believable, but Minneapolis allowed Chauvin to be a trainer, even though he had a number of complaints against him. And somehow or other, Antonio, in that training process, a sensitive young man who wanted to use his position with the Minneapolis Police Department became a police officer who would hold down a defenseless George Floyd while he was murdered. And it's like they drain the humanity out of the guy.
Right. And that's, you know.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, your thoughts on that.
Well, I was just going to say that that's exactly what's going on here. I mean, you know, since as far back as I can remember, I've always wanted to be a police officer. I wanted to be a police officer, so I held them in such high respect. The apartment where I first grew up in, the landlord was a police officer, and actually he became an alderman too. But anyway, so he was a police officer, and I looked up to him, and I wanted to be a police officer because I wanted to help people. But then I turned 16, and I wasn't—I didn't look like a little kid anymore. And a lot of things started happening, and I started getting pulled over a lot more and having more dealings or run-ins with the police and everything. Not because I was doing anything most of the time, but just for walking down the street or, you know, just sitting on my parents' stoop, you know, at the house. And, you know, those experiences just deterred me from ever becoming a police officer. And, it was just, I think what's going on right now is that at some point in our history, in training police officers, we switched from, you know, just putting them, remember the movie Police Academy? Where you would just go through an academy and mm-hmm. become police officer and you kind of learn how to be a police officer,
yeah.
you know, through experience. Well, now, police officers get training. They get training from different, you know, levels of the government. They get training from the military. They get training from different organizations. There's companies that are set up to train officers with the us versus them mentality. And remember, police officers are supposed to be part of the us. They're supposed to be with us, mm-hmm. right? The military protects us from them. And the police is supposed to be the part, you know, they're supposed to be in the us part.
Yeah.
But they're not anymore. They're not. And they've been trained to not be. They've been trained to be separate from the us. So they essentially become somewhat of a occupying force within a community. And I think that's what's going on. That, and coupled with the culture, which I relate the culture in the police department as the same culture as a gang, you know, where you got these rules. And if you break these unwritten rules, you know, and if you break these rules, you're going to have a tough time in the police department.
Well, I think that was the case to a certain degree with Kang in Minneapolis. He was trying to conform to the other officers, his senior officers. And again, he was only on his third, that was his third day in the job. Just think about that.
Yeah.
Third day in the job.
It's unfortunate, you know, but how old was he? 22, 21 or something like that?
No, he's older than that. He's about 26. I want to
say. Is he?
Yeah.
26? Okay. So at 26, you should definitely know right from wrong, right? And it doesn't take a lot to understand when somebody is suffering. Like, every time I see that video of McLean, I forget the young man's first name. But in Aurora, Colorado, is it?
Yeah. And I can't remember the man's first name either, but go ahead. I know what you're talking about.
But every time I see those videos, my heart just tears apart, you know, because I see someone who you know, is not doing it. I see myself in them, you know, because I know what it's like to not be doing anything and to be harassed by the police. And, you know, for these individuals, especially McClain, who had, you know, other issues going on and everything, but, you know, for the police to just come up and just, you know, not understand when somebody's saying, I can't breathe, help me, you know, to just kind of like block that out. The, remember the, I know you've seen this movie, A Few Good Men.
Oh yeah.
Remember the ending of that where the two Marines, the one younger, I can't remember his rank, but he's a younger private, I think, or something like that. He says, I don't get it. Why were we guilty? I don't understand. We did nothing wrong. We were just following orders.
Yeah.
Right. And then the other guy says, we were supposed to defend, you know, our fellow Marine from bad things. You know, and we didn't do that. We failed at that. That's what I see in this situation. It's like, King, you know, I feel bad that it was his third day on the job, but you signed up to this.
Yeah.
You signed up to be a police officer. You wanted to do good. This was your opportunity to do good. Mm-hmm. And you didn't do it.
No, and he'll be paying it at price for a long time. All right, let's go back to your story. And you went through all this training. You played the game. You did, how many years were you in the Marines?
Four.
4 years. You're part of a culture, military culture. You came out of a military culture for 4 years that is known for conforming with all the expectations that one would have of paying the utmost respect to the flag, the national anthem, etc. And you've come to this decision that you're not going to play the game anymore. Talk about playing the game. And we get back to what I'm talking about. Here we are on the eve of the 4th of July, this great patriotic holiday, and you don't stand for the national anthem. Talk about like the process that this left you at this spot in your life.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I stopped conforming a long time before I left the Marine Corps, just because, you know, I'm an individual who, you know, tell me what you need and I'll do it. Talk to me like a human being, you know, and that wasn't happening in the Marine Corps. You know, and that's fine. I signed up for it. But when I got out, I was kind of conflicted because I, you know, when I left the Marine Corps, I all of a sudden wasn't surrounded by that culture anymore. And so I went back home, absent the culture, and I kind of, you know, was able to sort of separate myself from that a little bit. Not completely, because there's a lot of stuff that I do that is still predicated on the fact that I went through the Marine Corps. And, you know, a lot of it involves training where, you know, if I'm in a large crowd, I'm constantly scanning the crowd, just looking around, just to see what's going on. But, you know, I've always had a profound respect for the flag, for our country. You know, I think I'm, you know, as best a patriot as I can be for the United States. I, you know, take pride in the fact that I was a Marine, and, you know, not standing up for the national anthem. First of all, the national anthem, you know, that third stanza in the national anthem, I'll never stand for the national anthem because of that alone. The part that talks about the, where Francis Scott Key was talking about, I think he ran a regiment or something. I can't remember what it was. And he got his butt kicked by former slaves that had went over to the other side. And he got his butt kicked that he added that to the third stanza of the of the national anthem. And he talks about how, you know, it doesn't matter if, you know, you go to the other side and fight for them to see you die, you know, brings joy to him or something. It's not the word that he used, but I'm paraphrasing. It brings joy to him.
You want me to read it to you? I can read it if you want me to.
Go ahead.
I'm not going to sing it. I'm just going to read it, and then you comment on it. And where is that band who so vauntingly swore that the havoc of war and battle's confusion, a home and a country, should leave us no more? Their blood has washed out their foul footsteps' pollution. No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave. And the star-spangled banner in triumph doth wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave. I think you're talking about that one. Yes.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the one I was talking about. It's just talking, you know, he, you know, was so ridiculed by the fact that he got, his regiment got their butt whooped by this, you know, almost all black opposition, and, you know, that he put it in the national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people don't know that that's in there. I mean, they should by now, but I don't, you know, I didn't know it for the longest time because we only hear the first one. There's actually three of them. So for that alone, that part alone, I'll never do that. But I mean, the whole part, the whole thing, the protest that took place about the national anthem that got started with Colin Kaepernick, you know, first he was sitting down and decided to take a knee in respect to I guess it was a veteran that told him, you know, at least if you're going to do that, at least take a knee, which he did. Has never been about the flag. You know, people talk about the flag as if it's this thing that the sacred thing that, you know, that the flag gets, it's not supposed to be worn, printed, or used for, you know, branding or anything, but yet you see it all over the place. You see it on the back of a pickup truck where it's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be in the front of the truck.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, people misuse and misrepresent the flag all the time. But nobody says anything about those things. You know, every time that the flag gets sprawled out across the field horizontally, it's not supposed to be that way. That's actually, they're not supposed to be doing that. So, you know, and then they want to talk about not, you know, people that don't kneel, they're not respectful for the flag or towards the flag. And it's never been about the flag. That's just a way to kind of deflect from the real issue, for why people are protesting, which is, you know, the abusive, behaviors and powers of the police department and how they're, abusively treating people of color. And that has always been the issue. And Colin Kaepernick said it, so, you know, so many times, and, you know, and everybody else that's done it has said it. And that's the same reason why I started doing it. And I got to tell you, it's hard. It's not an easy thing to do. It's hard. But for me, I believe that standing up for those who are unable to stand up themselves is more important than what my friends might think of me for not standing up for the national anthem. So I think it sends a profound statement.
Other than me giving you the high five when you're not standing for the national anthem, have you ever gotten abuse from people for not standing? Did anybody jeer you or...
I get the looks, but nobody's ever really said anything to me. Whenever I can, I try to avoid coming. Like, if I know that the national anthem will be played or a song or something, I try to arrive, you know, just a little bit late.
Yeah.
You know, especially if it's, you know, like at a school, you know, for a school event or something like that. Because I don't want to take away from the occasion. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't want people to turn to me when they should be focused on the kids or whoever it is that's out there. But I mean, just recently, I think there was a whole baseball team that, that knelt for the national anthem, like a whole entire baseball team knelt, Little League, I think it was. And I thought that was, or a high school, I'm sorry. I think it was a high school.
Antonio,
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, Antonio, everything has changed from those, the moment when, from what it was like when Colin Kaepernick first took the knee. And I remember when
the Redskins are changing their name.
Yeah.
Or not change. They're thinking about it.
Okay. I refuse to say the name of the team in Washington. Dennis and I were talking about this earlier on the show, and I just won't say the name. I've had guests on. A friend of mine is making a movie about that. Kevin Blackstone, promote that movie and that interview I did with Kevin. So I'm with Kevin. I won't say the name. And that story broke today, and it's so obvious to me that that decision to reconsider is motivated by money.
Absolutely.
That's correct.
The root of all evil.
Yes. And so I guess
absolutely.
Nike is not going to exhibit the Washington team's merchandise anymore. So they're losing. Right. The NFL is losing money. Some other advertisers are pulling out. I think it's UPS, not UPS.
FedEx.
Thank you. Yeah. And and so, just my attitude is that their other owner said to the Daniel Snyder, "You got to get rid of this. You got to change this." And he has refused, Antonio, down through the years to change it. So, yeah, things have – but with those early days when Colin Kaepernick was getting such heat and Trump was belittling him, I remember you and I would be talking about it, and we're like – you know, it seemed like the country was against the position that you and I were taking and Colin Kaepernick were taking. Now it's everybody. It's like, what is going on? It's
– yeah, you know, I think this pandemic, you know – the Americans in general tend to be a very busy bunch. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Things can be going on and it's like, oh, I didn't catch that. Oh, I didn't see that. And you know, you're busy. Something might catch your attention for a split second, but then, you know, something else does. You're on to the next thing or whatever. The pandemic stopped all of that.
Yeah.
People were, you know, I mean, people were left in their homes. But, you know, finding new ways of making banana bread, of all things, you know. And this occurred, this whole, you know, shift occurred while people were able to listen, I think, personally. Mm-hmm. They were, for the first time in their lives, they were able to listen to what was going on and see it, you know, plain as day. And the manner in which Chauvin, you know, just kept his knee on the back of George Floyd's neck was just so, you know, like I can't even describe, you know, like it was just so heinous, you know, it was just so wrong. And the fact that he was doing it with his hands in his pockets, like, you know, like, What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
I hate that. I hate when police officers are standing around with their hands in their bulletproof vest or their hands in their pocket. It drives me insane. Like especially at a scene where something just happened. Like, you know, because let me tell you this: in the Marine Corps, we were never allowed to put our hands in a pocket. If we were in uniform, we did not have our hands in our pockets at all. They're at your side, or you know, somewhere else, but they weren't in your pocket. And for me, it drives me insane to see police officers in uniform, you know, at a scene or, you know, crime scene or whatever, with their hands in their vest, you know, just walking around. Because it makes you look, you know, it gives you that look like you either don't care or you just, you know, kind of like the police officers that, you know, were kicking their feet up at Bobby Rush's office. You remember seeing that for the first time? What feeling did you get when you saw that?
Well, I had the feeling. This is one of my favorite topics, and we've talked about this one a lot. I had the feeling that they were absolutely comfortable in doing whatever they were doing without fear that there would be any ramifications for it, which is
right.
The same essential attitude expressed by Derek Chauvin when he put his hands right. in his pockets while killing a man on camera.
Right. 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 Exactly.
You know, yeah. On camera.
Yeah. And, you know, just with no fear of any repercussion whatsoever. Whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean,
at least the guy next to him, you know, asked, you know, should we turn him over or something like that. You know, he at least started, you know, getting that feeling and you know, to maybe they should do something. But, you know, Chauvin being the senior officer there just took charge of the situation.
And let me just point out one more time, Chauvin, this trained this younger officer. Somehow or other, Minneapolis thought it would be a good idea to have the younger officer trained by Derek Chauvin. All right, we're in the eve of the 4th of July. Do you have any feelings one way or the other about the 4th of July? Do you feel especially patriotic during the 4th of July, or do you feel annoyed by the 4th of July? What's your general attitude about the 4th of
July? Okay. Well, I'm going to give you my annoyance first. I am stupidly annoyed by the amount of fireworks that are being set off right now. It is just so annoying. I mean, it's crazy. I live out in, you know, southwest suburbs, and it's crazy over there. It's, you know, I'm nowhere near the city. I'm just like, what the hell? That said, I love this country. You know what I mean? I love this country. I love the U.S. It's not a perfect place to live, of course. I don't think there's a perfect place anywhere on the planet. But I think that we're headed in the right direction now. I think that people are finally waking up. They're finally, you know, let me share this one story with you real quick. I think this is where America is right now. Not minority America, but white America, right? So, I would get stopped by the police in front of my house. You know, and what people don't understand is when you're, you know, a lot of people say, well, if you're not doing anything, then it shouldn't matter, right? You should just let them do their thing and then be on your way. It's like, okay, well, first of all, it doesn't happen that way. Secondly, no, because if I'm not doing anything, they shouldn't be, you know, harassing me to begin with. But what happens is sitting on the stoop of my parents' house, they call you over, get over here, you know, put your hands on the car. Car they've been driving around in all day, so it's hot as hell. They search you in front of your neighbors. So everybody sees that you're being searched by the police. What's the first thing you start, you know, that comes across your head? They must have done something. It was the first thing that came across my dad's mind. Mm-hmm. And so when I would go inside, it's like, what happened? I didn't do anything. And I got tossed around a little bit because my dad didn't believe me, right? He came at the tail end of it where he just saw that they, you know, they let us go. He's like, well, what did you do? You must have done something. You had to have done something. You provoked them in some kind of way. What did you do? Nothing. And that happened, I think, once or twice. The third time, me and my friends were out there, and my dad was in the doorway when the police did that. And so then my dad was like, hey, hold on a second. What's going on? You know, I've been out here with them the whole entire time. They haven't done anything. Sir, get the hell out of the way. We're trying to talk to them. And it was at that moment that my dad realized that I had been telling him the truth the whole entire time. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's the point where America is right now, where it's like, oh, shit.
They've been telling the truth the whole time.
Right. One more story. I worked at BBM for a while. 780, right? Mm-hmm. And I got a call once about a woman, must have, you know, an old lady. She sounded like an old lady, you know, African American woman. And she was hurt, devastated, because the police had, you know, beaten one of her kids or something like that. And she wanted to tell her story because she felt like they shouldn't be getting, this was before any of this happened. This was years and years ago, maybe 2014, 13, somewhere around there. And so she just wanted to tell her story because she didn't feel that it was right for them to do what they did to her son. And so I brought it up to the news editor at the time. And there, he said, the old white guy, he said, nah, the kid probably did something to deserve it. Nah, we're not going to take it. And it was one of those calls where I knew that the woman was not lying. You know what I mean? Like, you just have a gut feeling like the person is telling the truth. And, you know, that kind of made me feel a certain kind of way about working there. And I didn't stay there much longer after that.
Mm-hmm. No, I know exactly where you're getting at. And I guess that gentleman had a faith in the system that you could not share, given your experiences. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And I hope you're right. I hope that we have reached a point where we've decided to move in a better direction. It sure seems that way, Antonio. But we'll see. Let's have this conversation a year from now and see where we're at, you know? First things first, get rid of Trump. How about that? First things first.
I'm on board with that. I mean, you know, this guy, he just, you know, the things he chooses to fucking back up and not back up is just, you know, he wants to protect the monuments and statues, one other quick thing. I'm sorry, I'm jumping all over the place here, but the way that the protesters were being treated, you know, where you got police coming out in riot gear to show that they are, you know, that the protesters are wrong about police brutality. You know, I cannot get over the fact how they treated the protesters, the Black Lives Matter protesters, the protesters against police brutality. And then when you had a bunch of white hillbillies who didn't want to stay inside in Michigan and got their rifles, their shotguns, their pistols, and marched on the state capitol. I didn't see any police in riot gear.
Because there wasn't any. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like that alone, that in itself says a lot.
Yeah. Operation Gridlock for Michigan. We talked a lot about that on the show. All right, so maybe a year from now you will be standing for the national anthem. We'll see. I hope we have.
If they get a new national anthem, I will never stand up for the national anthem as long as they keep singing the same song.
All right, we got to switch. All right, here we go. We'll close with this. What do you think the new national anthem should be?
I have no idea, but somebody. Who is far better artistically and probably has way more talent than I do should come up with that. It should be something new. I don't think it should be something old. I think maybe a culmination of things, but it should be something new. Something.
What if it was the same song remixed, like a, you know, like a techno style?
Well, you still have the prop with the lyrics.
Techno died. Techno died a long time ago, first of all.
EDM.
Wait, here we go. This is an old song, not as old as the national anthem, but it's older than either you or Dennis. What's Going On by Marvin Gaye should be the national anthem. Do you even know that song?
What's Going On? I know that part.
Oh, my God.
I've heard it.
I thought Marvin Gaye came on this show. I thought that was Marvin Gaye. My God, he started singing. Did Marvin Gaye come back to life? I mean,
Dennis, bringing up that cut. All right.
All right, we're going to close this down. You have not heard this yet. And my dear friend Antonio, from the South Side of Chicago, tough guy back in the day. And I think you should hear how our city officials talk when nobody's around. When they don't think anyone's around to hear them. We play this all the time. Love to get your reaction. This is Raymond Lopez, alderman of the 15th Ward, which is the ward not far from where you grew up, Antonio, with Mayor Lori Lightfoot behind the scenes having a discussion that they don't think the public will hear. And yet, somehow or other, we have this this recording. All right, Dee, take it away.
I want an answer. It's not something you ignore.
I think you're 100% full of shit, is what I think. If you think
offense, well, fuck you then.
Hold on.
Who are you to tell me I'm full of shit?
All right, Antonio, what do you think about that, huh? How patriotic. What's that?
It's like I'm going to go full circle here and bring it back to WWE wrestling.
Oh, yeah. Dude, like Lopez, before he talked, we cut a lot of it out. But, yeah, he was going on like a big babyface promo there.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, everybody puts on a good face when they're out in front of people, in front of public and everything. You know, I guess it sounds shocking because you wouldn't expect to – high-profiled individuals like that to talk to each other that way, but I mean, I'm sure it happens all the time.
I love it. Just when Dennis drops that tape every now and then when I'm that recording when I'm not paying it, it just cracks me up every single time. You know what I think? I think you're full of shit, but you're 100% full of shit. So then the issue comes, is she really fair? Maybe it's more like 40%. I don't know. People can do that. All right, final question before I let you go. What movie will you be watching this weekend while you're staying indoor away from the madness of fireworks, etc.?
All right, so I've already watched it. I'm recommending it to everybody else, and that's The Five Bloods. Okay, don't ask me who's in it. I'm really bad at that stuff. Don't ask me who directed it because I don't know.
Spike Lee.
It's very awesome. You're right. It is Spike Lee. You're right. I just, when you said that, it popped back in my head. It's an awesome movie about these guys. I think it's four Vietnam vets that go back to Vietnam, and they kind of, they're known as the Five Bloods, and they go back to retrieve the remains of one of their buddies and something else that I don't want to give away. So, awesome movie. I think it's fitting for the time.
I'm with you 100%. To Five Bloods, we've already discussed it on the show several times. So, after you see the movie, check out our conversation that we had with Sergio Mims and Danielle Scruggs, where we talk about the movie. And then you can listen to our interview with Charles Ellison, jazz musician, lives in Montreal now, but he was in Vietnam in 68 and 69 at the same time at the Five Bloods. Black man from Indiana and was in Vietnam, and he talks about his experiences. So, yes, that has been a very favorite movie of the Ben Jarofsky Show, indeed, The Five Bloods. I agree with you 100% on that. There's uneven. There's parts about it. You know, folks going into that movie, you think it's going to be brilliant from start to finish. Antonio, there were some moments in that movie. All right, Spike, you're getting a little. But overall, right. All right, Spike, you know. All right, listen, Antonio, stay safe, stay sound, and keep your faith in the system going. And maybe we'll see next year at this time of the 4th of July. Will you be standing for the national anthem?
Oh, say, can you see? Come on, Antonio.
Sitting right now. I'm sitting down right now.
Damn.
All right, Antonio. We'll talk to you soon. Take care, all right?
Talk to you later. Bye.
All right. That's Antonio Correa. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.